SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Grid Radio Network. Pro football full circle.
Circling. Oh, look out. Gronkowski didn't have the angle. Touchdown. Oh, Kenyon Drake. A miracle.
Murray heaves it downfield. It is caught. DeAndre Hopkins. Miraculous.
Fires. Mike Sims.
Can you smell it? Football is in the air. It's great to be talking football right here on Pro Football Full Circle. Joe Lisi, George Kurtz, right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius Channel 204, talking all things NFL. George and I have been going through the AFC and NFC previews. Yesterday, we touched on the NFC South and Tampa Bay. Today, we're going to look at the AFC South, George. Indianapolis with Carson Wentz, Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill. Before we get into that, though, intriguing developments in terms of the Hall of Fame, right? They came out yesterday and said that the Hall of Fame speeches are going to be only 6 minutes long. Any opinions about that? I think that's pretty good because those ceremonies seem to last about 4 or 5 hours.
All right, Hall of Fame. Now, first off, if you've heard me before, you know, I don't care. And that doesn't mean I don't mind. I'm talking about it's fine, but I don't care who gets in, who doesn't. I think most of this is political anyway. You know, so am I listening to these speeches? For the most part, no. I will listen to Drew Pearson's, all right, only because I find him interesting. I'm a Cowboy fan, and generally he's an emotional guy, so it should be somewhat interesting there. But, yeah, I mean, overall, of course, let's limit these things down. I don't need you to thank everybody from your first grade teacher to the custodian. I just don't need that. Good for you. You got in, but I rarely watch these things, rarely. Maybe it's to see who got in, who didn't. But the Pro Football Hall of Fame, how they do it as well, is also kind of leaves a lot to be desired. So I'm not a big fan.
Well, I'll tell you this, George. It's like, you know, I mean, Walter Payton was one of my favorite all-time running backs for the Chicago Bears and Jackson State. When his son gave that ceremony speech, it was just so moving, right? And then you see other players that gave speeches. I mean, I will say this in terms of the speeches overall. They are somewhat long. I mean, you could go out, get fast food, go to the bathroom. You might even be able to catch a movie and come back and they're still talking, right? So 6 minutes is long enough to get everything that you want to get out, you know, give thanks to friends and family, former players and coaches. So I really don't have a problem with it. I guess it comes down to it's taking away. I mean, some of these players have waited 20, 30 years, even longer, to maybe get into the Football Hall of Fame and the College Football Hall of Fame on the NCAA side. But, I mean, for the most part, it is an emotional type of ceremony. So, I mean, I'm sure that family and friends might be a little bit taken back by that 6 minutes.
Like I said, they seem to, like, sometimes they want to outdo each other and go on forever here. These are all prepared things. They, like, have a whole loose-leaf notebook that they're going to talk. No. I don't want to say, like, I don't care, but I don't care. All right, next. Yeah. All right, great. You got it. Congratulations. Most of the guys who were heroes of mine, we enjoyed watching and all that, but I don't need the 38-minute prepared speech here. I just don't need it. I'd rather have no speech prepared and have someone go off the cuff. I might find interesting. But like I said, odds are, outside of Drew, I'm not listening to anybody else.
Yeah, I agree with you. In terms of that, I mean, the quicker the better for for a majority of the speeches. There is those rare type of players that deserve as much time as they can give, you know, in terms of building the league, players like Walter Payton, players like Jerry Rice, LT. I mean, those are really established a league, and even older players as such, like Jim Brown. So we'll see how it plays out, you know, in August. More importantly, I mean, when you look at just the AFC West yesterday and then throughout the week, one signing that really benefits the Kansas City Chiefs was the Alex Okafor signing. They re-sign him for another year to add depth at the defensive front position, defensive end. We know about the off-the-field issues with Frank Clark. Does this team take a step up, though, with him re-signing? I mean, are they going to be that much better with him with the Kansas City Chiefs in 2021?
We don't know what's going to go on with Clark, right? He was charged with felony possession of an assault weapon, so we don't know what's going to happen there. We'll wait that out. One thing about this team is that helps them. The fact that the offense can score so many points so quickly, it generally does put opposing offenses one-dimensional. They're not going to be able to run the ball. They got to throw to keep up there. You know, they may try a run early to keep the Chiefs offense off the field, but, you know, that doesn't usually work. You got to score points to beat Kansas City. So do I think it helps? Of course. You're going to need pass rushers. Yeah, you're going to need them, and you're going to need more than just one, two, three, as many as you can get here. Do I think it solves all their problems on defense? No, but I certainly think it helps. I do.
Yeah, I do. I do too. Depth, right? We see about depth leading teams in the Super Bowl. You look at Tampa Bay, right? Look at the depth at the running back position with both Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones. The ability to wear down teams. You're going to need that because injuries are part of the game. We saw it, you know, with the situation with the LA Rams and Cam Akers. How does that team respond to adversity as the season progresses? Not just in the regular season. I've heard people mention that, you know, injuries for the most part, oh, the Rams aren't going to miss a beat. You know, maybe it's a win at the most in terms of their win total. They might be right about that, okay, in terms of the actual win total or how it affects the team in the regular season. But for me, it's the postseason. That's where you want to see those players step up. You want to see the depth in terms of leading the team to a possible Super Bowl. So when we come back, we'll get into the AFC South. Joe Lisi and George Kurtz right here on the grid. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Breaking down the AFC South, before we jump into Houston, we do have a special guest, former Tennessee Titan linebacker and Georgia Bulldog Rennie Curran will join us in next segment. We'll get his take about Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill for Tennessee. But let's look at possibly the worst team in the NFL entering 2021. Houston was 4-12 last year with Deshaun Watson at the helm, lost those 12 games by an average margin of defeat of 9.3 points per game. They lost five straight to end the year. Disappointing season. Bill O'Brien out. New head coach David Culley in. But the uncertainty surrounding Deshaun Watson is really where this team is in 2021. Our fans at FanDuel have pegged a total of 4 wins on this team. If you want to go over, it's minus 125. Tyrod Taylor should get the start, George. But I'm going to change my assessment. I originally thought that Detroit could be the worst team in the NFL this year with a win total of 5. But at least they have Jared Goff. I'll take my chances with Houston. Look at this schedule. Completely horrible. The Texans are the worst team in the NFL this season.
Well, you're talking about distractions, right? I mean, we don't know what's going to go on with Deshaun Watson. I mean, what's the over-under on games he's going to play this season? I mean,
2?
Seriously, what is it?
Realistically, 5 maybe? How about 5? I think that's a fair assessment. 5.
I just don't know. I just don't know. I might take the under on that. I just don't know he's going to play this year. I mean, all the legal problems, we don't know when this mess is going to get figured out. You know, when it's even going to begin to get figured out. What's Goodell going to do once it does? What's the minimum suspension he's going to get? Zeke got 8, and this seems to be much worse than what Zeke did.
Right.
Right? So,
right.
I mean, that precedent's already been set. I think Zeke got 6, actually, not 8. So are we talking 8, 10, 12 a season? What a mess. What a mess it's a complete for the Houston Texans.
It really is. And from a personnel standpoint, George, I mean, look at this team. I mean, you know, just let's look at the wide receiver core, right? An aging group. Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb. They got Kiki Kuti, who's the former Texas Tech standout that came on last year. But they lose Will Fuller. You look at the running backs. Phillip Lindsay, good, not elite. Yeah, David Johnson's okay, pedestrian. They only averaged 91 rushing yards per game. That was 31st in the NFL, right? Because you say, well, Deshaun Watson, he's chucking it every game. Yeah, he was. 283 passing yards per game. That's ranked 4th in the NFL from last year. They're not going to come anywhere near that with Tyrod Taylor. I say maybe 200, 210 in terms of the weapons that they have for this offense. But the problem as well, George, is defense, one of the worst in the NFL. 32nd against the run, 24th against the pass, and I had to double check. I had to look at it 5 times. They only had 3 interceptions as a defensive unit last year.
Yeah, the bottom line is they're not good. All right, you lost J.J. Watt. He's gone. You traded DeAndre Hopkins. You got, I mean, really nothing for him. I mean, there's all sorts of problems here. They have names. I mean, you already mentioned all the players. We know the names. Johnson, okay. Used to be good years ago. Not that player anymore. Cobb, sure. Green Bay used to be good. Cooks, yeah, absolutely. And his former stops, but they're not good anymore. They're just named players now, and they're aging players at that. I mean, at this point, you're in a rebuild. Right? This season's lost. Because even if you're optimistic about Watson, what's the minimum? He's out 6. I mean, so yeah, this season's toast. It just is. You're building from beyond here. And Watson's your most important part. And why are you going to trade Watson? Yeah, we haven't talked about Watson at all. Are you going to trade Watson once everything's cleared up? Miami, we came out, I believe it was yesterday, might have been the day before, but Dolphins would still be interested in Watson once the legal problems get cleared up. And don't kid yourself, there'll be other teams. So would I, because there'll be other teams that'll be in on it too. You know there'll be other teams that'll be in on it.
I'll tell you what.
You're more than Watson away, so you need a lot of help.
I said it before, as a Dolphin fan, I'll give you Ahmed, I'll give you Gaskins, I'll give you Devontae Parker, I'll give you Tua. Who else you want? The only person I wouldn't part with is Howard in the defensive secondary and Christian Wilkins. You can have everybody else. You can have everybody else. Give me Deshaun Watson in Miami. I'm that sold on if the off-the-field issues are behind him, and that's the big elephant in the room, right? If you're telling me everything is, you know, past and there's nothing to worry about moving forward, I'm all in on Deshaun Watson. I would trade 3/4 of the Miami Dolphins to get him. I'm that confident that he would be the quarterback of the future. I'm not sold on Tua, but that's a huge question mark entering 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I got some buddies of mine, not in the industry, and they'll tell you, oh, no team's going to ever trade for Watson because of what's going on. That's bull. They'll definitely, once things get cleared up and he gets punished and it's all done, there'll be teams lining up to trade him. Yeah, there might be an organization or two that won't do it because they don't want to hear the PR backlash, but there'll be plenty that do. Oh, you'll get the PR going, oh, no, he served his time, you know, he paid his punishment, whatever it might be, you know, and he's ready to play now and rededicate himself to society and all this other crap. But he'll go somewhere. And as you said, I don't think, if I'm Houston, I'm probably not going to want players for Watson, maybe certain players, but it'll be draft picks that you're going to want and multiples at that. And I think this bit, it's a shame they couldn't trade this offseason because Miami had all those picks. Now, Philadelphia next year, 3 number ones. You know, assuming Wentz gets them a number one on games play, that's 3 number ones from them. They could be in play for Watson next season.
Possibly. I'll tell you this. Their schedule, when you look at the total of 4 wins, it's not easy. And I'll tell you this. Just when you look at the team, Urban Meyer and Jacksonville week 1 are not going to be an easy out for Houston, even with Tyrod Taylor. There is no way Urban Meyer is going to lose to David Culley week 1. I'm sorry. Just not going to. I would bet against that happening, and I would be all in on the Jags and Trevor Lawrence winning that game, even though it's a home game for Houston. So we'll say it's a 50-50 game, right? But then they go at Cleveland, Carolina, at Buffalo, New England, at Indianapolis, at Arizona, L.A., at Miami before the bye week. That's the only win that you could say on paper is 50-50 for the Houston Texans to start the year.
I rarely play unders when they're that low. You know, 4 games, I mean, that's low. I mean, to get 3, but you're right. I mean, you look at the schedule, where are the wins coming from? But the problem is Watson, we just don't know. I'm assuming Watson doesn't play the year. I really am. I don't.
Well, you have to. If you're taking the under, you're saying Deshaun Watson's out. Tyrod Taylor's my guy.
So it's Tyrod Taylor and this ragtag bunch. Maybe you could split versus Jacksonville. You got the Jets in there. And it's not to knock the Jets, but it's a chance you could win. But where else? Where else are we going with these could wins? Carolina? Okay, you could. I don't really see it, but you could. Other than that, I mean, this schedule is saying loss, 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 loss. So, yeah, the under is what I'm leaning to. I'm not going to bet it because I don't know about Watson for sure. And if he does play, I think they'll squeak out more than four. But if I had to right now, if you were saying, absolutely, tell me where, give me the under. I don't see too many wins coming.
Well, you have to look at the quarterback perspective, right, when you look at these games. You have to say, okay, week one, does Tyrod Taylor have the edge over Trevor Lawrence? Yes, because of experience. We'll give him the edge, not on maybe physical attributes, but he's played in the league before, so we'll give him the edge over the Jags week one. But outside of that, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, even Cam. Right, Cam? Carson Wentz, I tell you what, that's a game because I'm not sold on Carson Wentz, and we'll get into that. But Carson Wentz, then Kyler Murray, Stafford, Tua, okay, we'll say it's even though I think Miami has a much better team. Then Tannehill, Zach Wilson, there's another game. Wentz again, Russell Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, after he's seen the defense already once, Justin Herbert, Jimmy Graps and Trey Lance, depending upon who starts, and Tannehill. They don't have the quarterback advantage in even six games this year. So four would be the pinnacle, in my assessment, in terms of this team exceeding their win total this year.
Well, they're not expected to have the quarterback advantage, right? I mean, Deshaun Watson is their quarterback, and now he's gone for whatever amount of time. So that's not a shock. And this is not, once again, I'm not knocking Tyrod Taylor. You know, I think he's a fine backup. That's what he is, a backup. Unfortunately, he has to start. You know, and it's not going to work out. They don't have enough. If this is a better team at other positions, okay, you can see it. But they don't have the defense. This is not a lockdown defense. They don't have a great running game. You know, they don't have much of anything here. No, this smells like 3-14.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll turn our attention to the Tennessee Titans. Rennie Curran joins us next. Joe Lisi and George Kurtz right here on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Breaking down the AFC South, we just talked about the Houston Texans. Going to look at Ryan Tannehill and the Tennessee Titans last year, 11-5 overall, started 6-0. Two tough losses in the beginning of the season to Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. But this team did win 11 games by an average margin of victory of 13.1 points per game. But all eyes for fans are on that disappointing loss in the playoffs to Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. If you want the lowdown on the Titans, you bring in a former standout at the University of Georgia, played with the Titans back in 2011. Rennie Curran joins us. Rennie, how are you today?
Doing great. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. I want to talk about Ryan Tannehill and the Titans overall. I mean, when you look at this team, I mean, you know, they really come on under Vrabel, their head coach, and really, you know, they are a dark horse this year at 28-1 to win the Super Bowl. Give us your assessment about, you know, the team overall heading into the 2021 campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I love everything that I've seen from them. And as a former player, I got to give major kudos to them of just how the ownership especially has just revamped this organization from, you know, the bringing in Coach Vrabel to, you know, even the stuff that they do with the former players. When we had the opportunity to go back there and just visit with the team, I mean, you could just see the life and new energy within the organization, just from the locker room to the lunchroom. I mean, everything was revamped as far as their facilities, the jerseys. I mean, everything as far as their culture is there. And I think it's really showing in how they're taking it onto the field and the pride that they have. The city of Nashville is rallying behind them. The players that they're bringing in, we all know Julio Jones is coming in, which is a major acquirement. But, you know, I really expect some great things from this organization and continued success and more consistency. You know, and Tannehill has really emerged as a leader for this team, along with Derrick Henry and so many other of their other players. So I'm really expecting them to have an amazing season.
Reddy, when you mentioned Julio Jones. As a former player in the locker room, how does that make you feel when you're already a good team? Titans are a good team even before Jones, but then the organization, they bring in a stud like Jones. What does that make you feel to let you know? Or do you get a little nervous thinking, okay, they want to win. They want to win now. But how does that make you feel when they bring in somebody like that?
Yeah, I mean, it only adds to the excitement. You know, when you already have a good culture and a group of guys that are tight-knit and, you know, leadership, which is where I believe it starts. You know, bringing in a guy like that only helps because you know that it's going to add to the culture if he has the right attitude, if he has the right mindset. And if he doesn't, he's not going to last very long. So I think we'll get to see how that plays out very quickly with the, like I said, with the leaders that they have on this team. I think a guy like Julio Jones, he knows his place. He's a guy that even when I used to play against him back in my Georgia days, I mean, he doesn't say much. He comes in and he goes to work. And I think he's the perfect guy to add to their culture and to add to that locker room. So I think they, you know, once again, the firepower that they already have, it's only going to do even more great things. And if you're a player that loves to compete, which you can't be in the NFL unless you like to compete, it just makes you even more excited knowing that you're going to have a high caliber player like that who can add to just the talent level in the competition.
Rennie, I want to talk about the defensive side in the sense of you were a former linebacker standout in the SEC, right? You understand what it's like to tackle a running back. And when you look at Derrick Henry, I mean, a bowling ball, right? Once you get him going downhill, it's so difficult to just take down with one player. He rushed for over 2,000 yards last year. Is it possible for him to build on that success? And what do you see just in his game? Could he be one of the possibly the best running back ever in terms of the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely one that you always have to stay on top of. And, you know, when you're playing guys like that, it puts the ownership on everybody to just do their job. You can't think that you're going to go in there and like you said, tackle him by yourself. It has to be gang tackling. It has to be everybody hitting their gaps on every single play because he's a guy who you can really have contained throughout the entire game. And then all of a sudden, you let one gap slip or, you know, you take a you know, there's some miscommunication and all of a sudden, he's off to the races. So you really have to stay on him the entire game. And then also, now that you talk about bringing in Julio Jones, it's like if you try to, as a defense coordinator, put a lot of attention on Derrick Henry, then that's going to open up some gaps for a guy like Julio Jones and the other weapons that they have to have a great day. So it's extremely it's going to be tough for them to manage. You know, I think as long as the Titans have a balanced approach, I mean, he's definitely going to have some opportunities to do as well as he did last year. And the offensive line has been playing great. You know, Ben Jones and those guys, another one of my former teammates, I think they're going to have a great season as long as, you know, they're able to keep doing those same things they've been doing.
Ray, you're a former linebacker. Let's talk about how the position has changed. I know we're going back decades here, but linebacker was always maybe the most important position on defense. You had to have somebody go side to side, keep the running game in check. Now that the NFL has gone pass happy, is it more important now for the linebacker to be able to cover that tight end, you know, be a coverage guy, close to a cornerback or even a safety than it is a run stuffer?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you definitely see a lot more linebackers these days who are kind of more well-rounded, you know, who are able to cover the field, run sideline to sideline, but also have good hips, aren't as stiff, and able to, like you said, cover the tight ends. Sometimes if they need to, drop back deeper, you know, they're in that cover two, be able to drop back and even cover some wide receivers. I mean, there's been some guys in who've been put in those situations. And as you know, you have those tight ends now who are the tweeners who, you know, they're big bodies, but they move like wide receivers. Guys like a Jared Cook, you know, who can run like they're 6'6" and can run a 4.4". So as a linebacker, like, yeah, you definitely can't just be a run stopper. You can't just be one dimensional. And so I think you're going to you're going to continue to see that evolve as the game moves on, faster, quicker, linebackers. And also, of course, it depends on the defense and how those defense coordinators like to use their linebackers. Some defense coordinators, which is something I got caught up in, they like those bigger bodies. They like those guys who can, you know, stay within the box, who are the thumpers. And then other defenses like those guys who are quicker and faster and can they can adjust, right? They can put them on the edge and they can rush them, but they can also drop them back and do different things with them. So I think a lot of it depends on the defense coordinator as well.
Talking to former standout for the Georgia Bulldogs, All-American, and former Tennessee Titan linebacker Rennie Curran. Rennie, when you look at the playoff loss last year to Baltimore and Lamar Jackson, close game, it was within striking distance, but Tennessee couldn't close the door and get that W to move on. What can the team learn from in terms of last year? And more importantly, can they go in status quo in terms of same offensive philosophy, pounding the rock with Derrick Henry and then working off a play action with Ryan Tannehill, or do you feel in order to make a title run, they need to change up their approach?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both, right? Like, they're going to have to definitely maintain that same level of execution and being able to run the ball effectively. We all know that you can't, you know, have an effective run without being able to control the clock. And, you know, defensively, they have to be able to control that time possession, you know, all those things, going three and out, you know, having a strong defensive line. So, they're going to definitely have to do some of those same things that got them there. And then at the same time, we all know that people are going to be keying in more on Derrick Henry and trying to make sure that they stop the run. So they're going to have to get, of course, their weapons involved. Guys like Julio Jones are going to have a great season. He's going to have to be able to stay on the field. Tannehill is going to have to play at a consistent level. You know, and so there's a little bit of adjustments that are going to need to be made. And then you look at how they lost Arthur Smith. That's going to cause a lot of changes as well. As far as how they run things offensively. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they adjust with all the new guys that they're bringing in and how they build that camaraderie over the course of the year. And they're going to have to start fast. You know, in the NFL, there's little room for mistakes, especially early in the season. So it'll be interesting to see, like I said, how all those new pieces come together.
Ready with training camp approaching real soon here. Give me what in your mind is the worst part of training camp and the best part of training camp.
Man, I think the worst part of training camp is just the day-to-day grind. Like, you're in there, man. You're going against guys nonstop. You're eating, sleeping, crapping football, and you're away from your family. You're away from a lot of things that are normal to you, and that's just all you're doing. So after a while, especially if you're a younger guy who's your first year, your second year, and you haven't really proven yourself, like, it's a grind nonstop, and you have to – you know, be on your P's and Q's every single day because somebody's trying to take your spot. And sometimes it just comes down to a numbers game. So even if you are good enough, you can still end up ending up in the best position. So that's probably the toughest part about training camp that most people don't know is that it's like the longest job interview of your life. You know, you get there and it's like you work extremely hard, you go through preseason, and you still may not make it even if you do have a great performance, which you see all the time. And then I think the best part, though, is just the relationships that you get to build during that time, the experience. You know, if it is your first time, if you're that free agent guy who's just trying to get your foot in the door, man, it's the best feeling in the world to actually be there, to be able to compete, to be able to do what you love to do. And there's just nothing like it, man, that level of competition, being in the locker room with the guys, man, that's what it's really all about. Anybody who you talk to, guys who either – play for 1 year, for 10 years, they'll tell you the same thing, man. It's about the relationships. It's about the guys in the locker room. It's about the little inside jokes and all those things that you go through, man, just getting into the season.
Rennie, great stuff. We got to get you on through the NFL season and, more importantly, when the Bulldogs kick off against the Clemson Tigers week one of the college football season. Thanks for joining us today.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys so much. Go Dogs and have a good one.
He was one of the best linebackers in terms of Athens. I'm an athletic linebacker, built low to the ground, weight room warrior. Love hearing him talk about Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. When we come back, we'll talk about the win total for Tennessee and the other two teams in the division, Jags and Colts, Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Sports SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Continuing the conversation on the AFC South, great insight from Rennie Curran, former standout for the Georgia Bulldogs, played with Tennessee back in 2011. But when you look at their win total right now, George, they're at 28-1 shot to win it all in terms of the FanDuel Sportsbook odds, in terms of the Super Bowl this season. Win total's at 9. And when you look at their schedule, not easy. I think it's manageable. When you have Derrick Henry, you can pound the rock. I think this team can get to 10 wins this year. So I would lean to the over, but how do you see it?
I think this is a damn good team. So they're my favorite team in the division. Let's get that.
Are they really?
Now. Yeah, I think they're set, Tennessee. I think they are. I think they have all the pieces in place here. I think... they're probably a team where I don't worry about anything. Not big worries. You know, a team we're going to talk about next is also a good team, but there are a couple of worries there that I'm not so sure about with them. Tennessee, it's not. So I'm going to go over here. I like this team a bunch. I think they're, I don't know. I'm not putting them up there with Buffalo or Kansas City. You know, they're not that, that great a team. So I'm certainly not saying that. But I think this is a good, solid team. All right, let's look at the schedule here. All right, in the division, I expect them to go pretty much 4-2 in those games. Maybe even 5-1. That wouldn't shock me at all. Maverick, I probably should be more 5-1. They'll split with Indianapolis and go through the other teams. It's a tough start. Arizona, Seattle, Indy. You know, but still, I think you can go 2-1 in that. Yeah, New York's a W there. Buffalo, Kansas City, that's a rough stretch there. Buffalo, KC, Indianapolis, LA, New Orleans. Wow. You'd love 2-2. Love 2-2, but it could be a 1-3. That wouldn't all that shock me. Before you get New Orleans, you know, who knows how they're going to be. Houston, New England, then it eases up again. You know, so I think this is an above 9 win team. I have them closer to 11.
Yeah, you need – I'm with you. You know, that's why FanDuel has them over 9 at minus 150, you know, because they agree with you. And I think as long as the defense gets a little bit better, they get Bud Dupree, the outside linebacker that comes over. They have Harold Landry there as well. They draft Caleb Farley, the cornerback, with some off-the-field concerns in terms of injuries from Virginia Tech. But if he can step up and at least be 80%, 90% of what he was in Blacksburg, that defense has got to be better than 24th against opposing quarterbacks in terms of pass defense, right? So if you can get it even to like 19th, you should be able to pull maybe even two more games out this season. So we'll see. I mean, I'm in agreement with this. They have the most experienced and battle-tested quarterback, even though I don't love him, Ryan Tannehill. He is clearly the best quarterback of the division entering 2021 because he's got the experience and he's got one of the best running backs in the game in Derrick Henry. So we'll see how that plays out. Let's look at Indianapolis. My favorite quarterback, Carson Wentz, right? Last year with Phillip Rivers at the helm, 11-1 overall. This team won 11 games by an average margin of victory of 12.9 points per game. One of the upcoming running backs in Jonathan Taylor. They have a thunder and lightning type of duo with Hines there as well. The third down back, they ranked 11th in the NFL in terms of rushing offense, 11th in passing offense, and one of the best offensive lines in the league entering 2021. The huge question mark is, can Carson Wentz reunite his career with Frank Reich in Indianapolis? I'm not so sure. Difficult schedule. I think this is a possible playoff team, but they're going to need Carson Wentz to step up this year.
Yes, I think their entire fortunes rely on Carson Wentz. If Carson Wentz steps up and is a good player this year, even let's say above average, let's not go as far as good. Above average player, this is a damn good team. All right, everything else is in place there, assuming they can stay healthy there. But Carson Wentz is certainly the wild card. Now, I know he's not on your Christmas card list. You have no faith in Wentz. I guess I'm a tick above that. I'm not going to quite go that down on him. I don't have much faith in him either. I think getting out of Philadelphia could be a good thing. The offensive line was a mess last year. It just didn't work out for whatever reason. It just didn't. He's not that far away from when he was going to have what might have been an MVP season until he tore his ACL. So where is that guy? You know, can Reich find that again? I'm as curious as anybody else because, like I said, I think this is a team where if they probably should have beaten Buffalo last year with Phillip Rivers in the playoffs.
Yep. Right,
they probably
yep.
should have
Pascal killed them. Pascal killed them in terms of that fumble. Right? Or almost fumble at the end of the game. I mean, that was a critical juncture in turning that game around. You know, they didn't convert on fourth down in that game. That was tough. But Rivers played fairly well. I mean, the biggest thing about Frank Reich in that playoff game is that he utilized mismatches. Michael Pittman, huge first half in that game, right? They utilized, everybody was keying on Taylor. It was Hines that broke out in the second half in terms of the running game. So he is an ultimate game planner and really puts his team in a position to exploit the defensive weaknesses. The problem I have with this team is not talent. The problem is not the offensive line. I mean, they have one of the top offensive lines. I mean, Eric Fisher, Quentin Nelson, Ryan Kelly. I mean, that is a dominant offensive line, and they're going to protect Carson Wentz. The problem that I have with Wentz is this. He stares down the receivers, couldn't challenge defenses vertically over the top in terms of extending the defense in terms of the vertical pass to his wide receivers. His security blanket has been and always will be, now he's moved on, Zach Ertz, the tight end. Well, that's not the strong suit of Indianapolis. It is those wide receivers. Pittman, Pascal, T.Y. Hilton. Can he go through his reads and progressions when teams stack the box and force Wentz to beat them over the top?
And you do need someone that you have to have an over-the-top threat. In today's NFL, you have to have that. You need a back those safeties off the line of scrimmage. Get them to play deep. Let Jonathan Taylor do his thing. And that's another thing, by the way. If they're not giving Jonathan Taylor the carries he needs here, if they're going to split this all around, I think that's a mistake as well. I think this guy could be a bell cow. I think this team can almost play 80s football, 90s football, where you run the ball and use the run to set up the pass here. And that might benefit Wentz as well, for that matter. So I do like the Colts. But once again, I like Tennessee more because I trust Tannehill. I don't trust Wentz. It's really what it comes down to. I think he could be something.
Right.
But I don't know that for sure.
Well, FanDuel sort of disagrees with us because when they look at their win total in terms of Indianapolis, right? We talked about Tennessee being a flat 9 at -150. You look at Indy right now, they have a win total higher in terms of 9.5 and -150, right? So it's not the flat 9 that we saw with the Titans, right? It's a 9.5 at -150. So let's go through their schedule quickly. Seattle and Russell Wilson, they're losing that game. LA Rams with Stafford, very difficult. Then three road games at Tennessee, at Miami, at Baltimore. Those are very difficult to start the year. We're going to know the mental resolve of that team and Carson Wentz in the first month of the season. Then they get Houston at San Francisco. They get the Titans again at home. Zach Wilson and the Jets. Jacksonville at Buffalo. Tampa Bay at Houston before the bye week.
I think you put it perfectly in one of your first sentences. We're going to know about Wentz in Indianapolis real quick. You know, Seattle, LA, Tennessee, Miami. You're going to know. Yeah, I think I'm not going to say, by the way, that they're going to lose to Seattle week one. That is at home. I think Seattle week one, week two against the Rams, 1-1. You're hoping to split here. Same thing with Tennessee and Miami. You're hoping to split. You're hoping to go really 2-2. You'd like to go 3-2 if you want to include the Baltimore game, but that is three straight road games at Tennessee, at Miami, at Baltimore, and that Baltimore game is a Monday night game. So
right.
Hey, yeah, that's brutal. I mean, if things go wrong real quick here, if you're 1-4, you're already behind the eight ball here. And before you get your schedule a little easy, you get Houston the next week, but then you got San Fran, Tennessee, before Jets, Jacksonville, but then Buffalo, Tampa. I'm not seeing 10 wins. I'm not seeing double digits here. Schedule's
now
tough.
They do get Paris Campbell back from injury, the burner from Ohio State. Hasn't lived up to expectations, so he's going to bolster that wide receiver core. So they are going to spread it. Make no mistake about it. They're going to put you five wide or even four wide in terms of multiple sets. That's going to open up running lanes for Jonathan Taylor, but they need Carson Wentz to deliver. They need him not on dink and dunks in terms of dig routes to the tight end. They need seam patterns, post patterns. He needs to deliver, and as much as I hated Phillip Rivers in terms of being that turnover machine, he at least put his team in a position to win ball games. Do you have enough confidence in Carson Wentz with a new team to say, you know what, he's going to be the guy? Because the rumors and everything that we read in terms of Philadelphia, he didn't study film enough. He didn't make those players around him better. As the starting quarterback that's supposed to make a title run, is that what you want out of a $41 million player?
You know, if this is about, and this is not just about Wentz, by the way, but about any player, ready? Any top player who ends up moving on, and we hear these things, I tend to take it with a grain of salt. It's sometimes okay. The PR machine in work at work here. We have to make up the excuse of why we had to give up on this guy. You know, so we're gonna, you know, this is why, you know, he didn't do this, he didn't do that. I'm not saying it's not true. Yeah, you know, sometimes I think these things are exaggerated a little bit to make the team look better. I say it's the PR machine at work there in the NFL. All sports, really, they do this. So I say take it with a grain of salt there. That being said, and, if I was positive that Wentz was going to be anywhere near the player he was, pre-ACL, I would love Indianapolis. Absolutely love right. Indianapolis. I think everything else is in place here. Absolutely in place, but I don't. I don't think I'm quite as down on him as you are, but I'm, like I said, one step up from you. I'm not that far right. from you. I agree. There's a lot of right. issues here, and I don't trust him. This is why I like Tennessee more. If I'm gonna bet on a division winner, I'm gonna bet on Tennessee. I may not love Tannehill either, but I can trust him. He's played better the last couple of years, and they've added Julio Jones.
Right.
You know, that's another thing with Indianapolis. I don't. You have a tight end. Jack Doyle is old as dirt now. We'll see what the others mm-hmm. can do. I know they've been all right there. The wide receivers need to see someone step up and be that guy. That's a little rough as well here. I like Indianapolis as a team, but Wentz scares me, and that schedule is really kind of brutal.
Totally agree. I'm with you. I think both teams can go over there 9.5. I think we might see both teams at 10. I think Tennessee might be at 11 with you. I think they are the better team in the division. I like the complementary pieces for the Colts. Don't like Carson Wentz in leading this team past where Phillip Rivers led them last year. So we'll see how it plays out. Both George and I are on the win totals over at -9.5 for the Colts and -9 for Tennessee at -150. We'll turn our attention to Urban Meyer in Jacksonville, 1-15 last year. What can you say? They lost 15 straight games in 2020 by an average margin of defeat of 12.8 points per game. But they do get number one draft pick, Trevor Lawrence, the national champion from Clemson. He's supposed to turn around the program, and the face of the franchise takes his teammate, Travis Etienne, from Clemson as well, later in the first round. It's a dynamic 1-2 punch. You have touchdown Timmy Tebow there as well. FanDuel set a 6.5 win total this year at even money, -110. Can Urban get it done in year number one, George?
My guess would be no. You know, I don't know if he gets it done, period, by the way. I don't know when was the last time, really since Jimmy Johnson, that a top college coach came in and really wrecked the NFL?
Well, how about Pete Carroll? How about Pete Carroll?
Okay, I might give you Carroll.
He won a Super Bowl. Come on.
All right, I'll give you Carroll. All right, leave me alone. All right. My issue is this. We've seen so many mistakes from Meyer already. All right, at least my mistakes. The coach he hired that had the terrible background that had to go away. Tebow is, you know, bringing him on. Drafting Etienne, I mean, what are you doing? You had James Robinson. It wasn't an area of need. You had so many other problems. Are you worried about running back that early? I thought that was a mistake here, you know, bringing your own guys. I sort of get it. You got to sell your program, so sometimes you do need your own players to sell that to the locker room. I can understand that. But for a team that had other problems, I wouldn't have gone that direction.
When we come back, we'll wrap up Jacksonville and the rest of the AFC South. Joe Lisi and George Kurtz right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Wrapping up the AFC South, we were talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars quickly. And when you look at their schedule, George, 6.5 wins on the FanDuel Sportsbook at minus 110. They are at Houston. I think that's a winnable game. Denver, winnable. They get Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals. Then at Cincinnati with Joe Burrow, but it's Zach Taylor. I think Urban Meyer wins that game. Tennessee, Miami, and London before the bye week. There's the potential for 3 wins early on. I'm going to roll the dice. It's Urban Meyer. He doesn't lose football games. I'm taking the over this year in 2021.
He's going to lose football games this year. I think they're heading in the right direction, but this is an under for me. You and I will disagree here. You're giving all these 50-50 ones. You're saying they're going to win? I don't even know if they're 50-50. Denver's better. Arizona's better. You can argue that Cincinnati's better, too. They'll win some of them, but not all of them, though. They have a rough stretch. Seattle, Buffalo, Indianapolis, San Fran. I'm not going to give them Atlanta either, by the way. Rams, Tennessee, Houston, sure. Jets, okay, some wins there. Maybe even New England. But to win all these games to get to the over? No, under.
Okay, I will say this. I like their linebacker core. Young, athletic, talented players. Josh Allen from Kentucky, Miles Jack, Chaseon from LSU. He can do some damage with that group, I'll tell you that. The biggest weakness to me is the wide receivers. They have Chenault. They have DJ Chark. They have an aging Marvin Jones. Can Trevor Lawrence develop in year one? That's going to be the biggest thing. And to your point about Travis Etienne, I think why he took him is because both Etienne and Lawrence are winners. They're both practice type of players. They understand the culture, and that's what he was trying to change. You know, in order to change a losing team to a winning team, you have to change the culture of the locker room, not just in games, but during practice. And I think that's why they brought in Tim Tebow as well.
Oh, I wish we had more time here, but bottom line for me is this. You had a decent running back. Running back is not what it used to be. There's almost a dime a dozen right now unless you get a special one. You had so many other needs. I would not have used that pick on a running back. No way in hell.
Running backs are explosive. We're going to be here all week. Keep it where it is. We'll be breaking down the week one action. Have a great day, everyone.
Sometimes winning.